Please introduce yourself.
I'm Amy Farrah-Weiss. I'm a candidate for mayor.
And I'm going to time you. Can you give me a one-minute version of why you should be mayor of San Francisco?
Whoever becomes our next mayor needs to focus on stabilizing our systems and our neighborhoods and neighbors in crisis and have a really good economic analysis on how we can work towards meeting the essential needs of our residents while maintaining our systems and growing sustainably. And I have a unique background in that way. I also, am a product of California Bay Area public schools, from kindergarten to De Anza Community College to UC Santa Cruz to my master's in organizational development from SF State. And so I learned critical thinking skills and a framework for how to engage in the world here in the Bay Area, and I want to be in service to that. And I've been trying to do this work, working with City Hall over the last 2.5 years as the founder and director of the St. Francis Homelessness Challenge. And no matter who becomes mayor, I want to work with them or lead the way to healing our neighbors who are living in crisis right now.
Thank you very much. And we're going to go in a lot more depth into a lot of your platform points and questions we have for this about the city. But I'm wondering if we could start by having you describe the neighborhood where you live.
So I moved into the neighborhood that I'm currently at, which is in District 8, but it's right at the border, which is very similar to who I am as a person. I consider myself non-binary. And so where I live, if I turn right, I go up to Noe Valley. If I turn left, I'm in the Mission. And so I'm right in that intersection, and I'm very close to the 24th Street BART.
And what's your pronoun, by the way?
Oh, whatever's clever. But generally, you know, I'm female-bodied, and that's how I've gone through life. But, you know, they is also good. But I do consider myself, you know, non-binary, which is an interesting thing to be able to say in this day and age that people understand the concept of genderqueer. But just a note on that, one of the most exciting things I learned in high school was about the Venn diagram and this idea of overlapping and that you didn't need to be in one camp or the other. And then at De Anza Community College, I learned about the Kinsey scale of sexuality and this idea that there was a spectrum. And that's something that's really, you know, resonated with me at an early age. And I bring that to the political world as well, because I'm really working in service to the greater good while promoting individual freedoms to the extent possible, and really having everybody look at an issue on the side of community well-being and multiple stakeholders, not just getting entrenched in an us versus them dynamic. And that's really what the city of San Francisco needs right now, not the us versus them, but where do we align? Where do we critique where necessary? And how can we work together to transform this with very strategic and pragmatic policy that I think most people would agree, if we can raise all boats and we can address essential needs, then we can prosper as an entire city.
So a couple quick notes. One is I'll be identifying you by a pronoun at some point.
Sure.
So which should I use?
You can use she.
Okay, I'll use she. And then secondly, because we have quite a bit of time to talk, but also I've got a lot of stuff I want to get through. So if I start going like this or something like that, then I'll just want to kind of like, you know, wrap on that subject up. Just because I don't want to be rude.
I can get going on the topic.
Okay, which is great. Which is why it's great to hear your voice and talking about what it would be like if you were mayor. So we're going to be looking at different topic areas that follow pretty closely with the beats that we cover here in our news department. And we're starting with energy and environment. And the first question I have is pretty specific about San Francisco, something that's been coming up a fair amount, which is, what is your plan to deal with San Francisco's litter problem?
That's under energy?
Environment and energy. And,
okay. Well, I would say that if we take our current budget, take a good look at it, and see that $30 million is currently spent on a move along strategy to fund DPW, Department of Public Works workers, and SFPD officers to shuffle our 3,000 to 3,500 residents from block to block with the outcomes that we're seeing. And that's just for SFPD and DPW. And the budget is so big for DPW that it's more of a matter of not having more money to go into it, which many of the other candidates are proposing. We put additional funds in. I want to really dig in and inspire those DPW workers to work with me because I've done the work. I've been in encampments and actually worked with encampment residents and DPW workers to clean up the litter on the streets in major undertakings and taking things to the dump even.
That's specifically in encampments. How about elsewhere in the city?
Sure. Well, I feel that if we're working with our unsheltered population to actually address the need and partner together, then we're going to see less litter overall. I was driving my car truck the other day and there was a woman in front of me who just opened her window and threw something out the window. And I just had this feeling that she just got this sense that this city doesn't care about me. I don't really care about this city. That was just what I took in from the situation. And there's something really amazing that can happen when you actually recognize that it's part of the population that we've been treating. Literally, the city treats like trash and sweeps human beings without a place to go. Then how is it that people of all incomes are going to feel like they want to take pride in this environment? And so it has to start somewhere where we're giving. And I would love to work with DPW workers to get more of that sense of inspiration about the work that they're doing, and then also inspire residents to care about their place. Because if you invest in unarmed programming in sites that have a lot of public and health safety issues, and litter and all these other symptoms, I see these as symptoms of a system that's in crisis. Mm-hmm.
Well, on another environmental question, how do you plan to prepare San Francisco for the effects of climate change, like sea level rise along the waterfront?
We just have to do the work to evaluate, which is already being done right now. I've seen some presentations from the Port Authority saying what is necessary and showing a variety of different approaches to how we do that. It's going to cost money. And so that's something that the city has to plan for in terms of bonds. But we also have to look to the state and federal government to be able to support that, because San Francisco is part of the state and the nation. And we want to be able to make sure that the city is sustainable for the future. But on that note, I would just like to add that currently we have about $500 million that's invested in fossil fuels in SFR's pension fund. And there's been a discussion about how to divest that money. And I think we can do that in a way that's actually working to build San Francisco housing for our workforce and families with a source of pride. So let's go ahead and say we're going to prepare for rising sea level and be really responsible with our development, but we're also going to prevent it by pulling out our funds from fossil fuel companies and figuring out ways to invest that and actually evolve current technologies and our Clean Power SF program so that we can be leaders in preventing further issues with it.
Would divesting from fossil fuel companies be one of your earliest actions as mayor?
Well, that would be something that would be a discussion.
It would be a discussion with the board.
Well, it would actually be a discussion with the city workers and SFers. And I'm probably the only candidate when I went to the retired SFers group. It was over in the Outer Sunset, and there were about 200, 250 former city workers. A lot of them don't live in the city, but, you know, used to work here. And I asked them, like, raise your hand if you heard about divesting from fossil fuels, the $500 million, and think it might be a good idea to invest in affordable housing. And, you know, a small smattering raised their hand. And then I explained the concept a little bit more about having a return, you know, that would be suitable for the SFR's pension fund and, you know, who we would be building for. And more people raised their hand. And so it's a discussion about how we invest our money into something that we can all get behind.
Mm-hmm. And then how would you make sure the city and its residents are prepared for future droughts aside from divesting or pushing to divest?
Well, that's something that makes me want Delaine Easton to be our next governor and Gail McLaughlin to be our next lieutenant governor, because I know that in those positions, they would be looking out for our water supply at the state level and doing reasonable, legislation and guidance around water extraction from companies like Nestle and how we have a more efficient agriculture system in California. I'm open to exploring over this next year and a half, what is it? Let's get up to date with what the PUC is talking about in terms of their strategies. This has been, it would just be initially getting up to date around that and then figuring out how we can take existing programming and either amp it up or think about, if there are some bold new ideas. It's interesting, I've done some research in the past. It's been a while, but just of desalination systems and environmentally friendly ones are hard to come by because they do take a lot of energy. So if we can get our grid producing more energy here, that would make that seem to make more sense. Let's talk about it. But I understand there's a lot of complexity when talking about desalination.
So you would be interested in building up the renewable energy infrastructure of San Francisco?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And also linking that to local hire, because as mayor, one of the major things I want to do is invest in our SFUSD students and CCSF and SF State students and graduates and figure out how do people get jobs if they want to have jobs and jobs that are actually going to sustain them with affordable housing coupled with that. And that's the good thing about when we're investing in people to be able to participate in the economy here and provide these essential jobs in the workforce is that we don't have to create additional housing. Generally, they have that housing, but they might want to branch out on their own and have a family one day. I'm 41 years old and live with two housemates, and my partner lives and my stepson live over in Oakland. And so we're trying to consolidate in San Francisco, and I know what a challenge that can be.
Oh, a lot of people know that, for
yes.
Sure. We're speaking with Amy Farrah Weiss. She's a candidate for mayor of San Francisco. We'll turn to health, and this actually has to do with environment also. The cleanup at the Hunters Point shipyard, there's an overwhelming percentage of soil samples that were taken on some parcels there by the company Tetra Tech, and they were found to be falsified. It's a former Superfund site because of toxins left by the Navy, and it's a location where Lennar Corporation is building 12,000 housing units. This has been in the works for many, many, many years. But the findings show potential for a lot of potential hazard. As mayor, what do you plan to do about this scandal?
Well, I was the first mayoral candidate that was coming out strong about drawing attention to this again by hearing what came of those public records requests. And I'd been aware of this over the years, that this was an issue. I didn't fully know the extent of the falsification of the records until pretty recently. And what I would do as mayor is work with the community advocates that have been working on this issue and trying to get environmental justice for years, for decades. And we have Green Action, that's one of those groups, and the Bayview Hunters Point community activists, and there's many more.
Do you feel like their voices are heard enough, that they have been heard by the city government?
Well, I just want to put a call out to Dianne Feinstein and Kamala Harris and Nancy Pelosi. It's one thing if, we had our representatives that weren't actually San Francisco residents and called this place home, but they are. They should be coming out in front and saying, as in their roles at the federal level, they have the ability to make this a huge issue and to draw attention to the whistleblowing aspects of it, and that people were fired for coming forward with new information, and to make this an issue for environmental justice for the whole country. And I know that there are a lot of challenges going on right now, but this is one of the biggest cases of eco fraud. And the money that was invested in Tetra Tech as a corporation and what they did to endanger the lives of so many people, it's very important to address. And so holding our elected officials accountable at the federal level is really important, and that's something that I'm going to pursue.
Turning to something else in San Francisco, the Healthy San Francisco program, which provides nearly universal health care for people living in the city. That's a program paid for by the city government. It's around $50 million in a recent fiscal year. That's supplemented by millions in payments required by businesses, where we see like the Healthy SF surcharge in some restaurants. What do you think about this program? It's for lower income residents and undocumented residents also.
Well, I was a recipient of Healthy SF doing the work that I was doing as a low-paid entrepreneur. I guess you could call me like social entrepreneur, you know, starting these organizations to address some of the biggest needs of our city, but not getting paid enough to afford my own health care. And so I've been a recipient of government-subsidized health care through Healthy SF. And also through different jobs along the way. And then now I'm a recipient of Obamacare and of Medi-Cal. And so
Obamacare took a lot of that load off of Healthy SF.
Sure. And so, you know, I think that having Healthy SF still be there, and as we work for towards universal Medi-Cal at the state level, that's something that I support. It's about building so that eventually, everyone who's a resident of San Francisco should have their essential needs met as a human being, which includes housing, it includes healthcare, which is also mental health and dental, it includes education and transportation and nutritious food. All of these things are essential needs for people, and the ability to eventually retire. These are all essential needs that should be met, and we have enough largesse in our budget as well as our corporate profits to be able to figure out how we ensure that those essential needs are met and there isn't the current gaps there are for access to those things.
So just to be clear, you're saying that the city has enough money or should have enough money to be able to provide for all those essential needs for people, whether it be housing or healthcare, transportation, et cetera.
Yes, we do have enough to actually stabilize our current population right now and address those issues of crisis, and then plan ahead for how we move forward with sustainable growth. Because that's what this next mayor needs to really be focusing on, is stabilizing our current population. And it's okay to say, hey, everyone, we have 3,500 people on our streets right now that we want to stabilize out of crisis conditions and really work with. And that means that we're asking the Bay Area, we're asking the United States, like, give us this space. You know, if I were mayor, I would ask for this space to be able to do this work. And we want to export that out to other Bay Area cities, how we would take this approach of crisis triage stabilization for our shelter shortage crisis and work with people. But we also have to be thinking about the Central SoMa plan, which to me rings of the Twitter tax break second.com boom. And I'm really concerned.
You're talking about downtown growth, like, or SoMa
correct.
Growth?
The Central SoMa plan is something that our next mayor will have a big hand in helping to shape. And it's important that if we move forward with this plan, it's not just to build the 50,000 new tech jobs that are being promised for what end, you know, and only 7,500 units of housing, even if it goes up to 10,000, that's still a 5-to-1 ratio. And if we're not connecting that to local hire, and we're not making sure that it's our residents that build those buildings and maintain those buildings and get to work inside of them, then what is the point of that kind of growth? I don't know if you're familiar with the Kate Raworth's idea about donut economics, but it's an economic framework where it's about meeting the essential needs in many different dimensions for human well-being, but working with what they call regenerative and distributive economy within the planetary bounds. And so that approach is what guides me, and she's what she would call growth agnostic when it comes to the economy, because it's not growth that you're after. It's actually being able to balance the system. And then if you can do that while meeting essential needs, yes, then grow sustainably with your, you know, residents, with your workforce, with, you know, with the planet.
So you want to see more balance between job production with housing provision, in part, especially with this SOMA plan.
Yeah, jobs to housing balance. Mm-hmm. But also, we have to be thinking about how we create economic equity and even reparations for some of our residents. And I would say our African-American residents require some reparations for institutionalized racism and redlining. But we have to be working towards that opportunity so that we truly are building up our city and maintaining it together.
And as mayor of San Francisco, you could set a lot of examples for other cities as well, as far as those maybe more national issues as well, such as reparations, for example.
Definitely. It's so important for San Francisco to be a leader around this and look in the mirror instead of just saying that there are other places in the country that are doing it worse. We have to look at what happened with the redevelopment of the Western Addition that took a thriving African-American neighborhood and just literally pulled it up by the roots and demolished it. And at the end of the day, had 3,000 less units. Can you imagine a development plan today that would take away 3,000 units? What a short-sighted, racist plan that was put into play for really for corporate interests. And we have the ability to say, well, let's look at our property tax exemptions. And should we create property tax exemptions for African-American homeowners? And should we create rental subsidies so that we look at this 3% dwindling population and say, how is it that we truly go about building that? A lot of people and politicians say, that's not my job to do at this time. Other places are doing it worse. But we have the opportunity to truly set an example.
So would you do that?
Yes. Yeah, I would be exploring that over the next year and a half to how, like, let's, it's part of my, one of my cards that I made up, you know, was part of my top 12 at the time, is economic justice and reparations for African Americans. And it's the time to do that. It really is. It's long past due. And that means the environmental justice in Bayview Hunter's Point as well. Mm-hmm. And it means that we invest in neighborhoods rather than investing into 200 additional new police officers as being proposed by London Breed and some of my fellow colleagues who want more police officers. If you look at the fact that, as Jane Kim pointed out, it's $171,000 per new officer. And so 200 new officers equals $34 million. Think about the areas of San Francisco that have the highest crime and safety issues. They're generally low income, people of color, marginalized communities, unsheltered residents. What if instead of investing $34 million into 200 armed officers, we actually took those 100 sites that have the highest 311, 911 crime statistics. We could invest $300 million in each of those sites and still have $4 million to administer the program working with the communities impacted most by public health and safety issues.
No, I'm sorry. Did you say $300 million?
We'd have...
$30 million?
It's $34 million for 200 new additional officers. So I'm saying that we would have what you could have is taking those 100 sites and putting $300,000 into it. And then you'd still have $4 million to administer the program. And that's a big issue because we want these existing community organizations that are already doing that righteous work of healing at the root. We want
they
them to be
they have trust already in the communities.
Yeah. And we want to invest in them because we're asking them to partner with us. And that means that we have to be able to pay for that participation because we're taking away other opportunities and figure out how do we hire people for this. You know, with $300,000 per the 100 site, you could hire three $20 an hour jobs and still have $150,000 for resources. So that's unarmed programming.
Officers get paid more, evidently, than that.
Correct. And, well, $171,000 all told with benefits.
Of course.
But $20 an hour is a good salary. And people can quibble about that. But, I walk the talk. I've lived in low income and poverty wages for most of my adult life doing this work.
I mean, ultimately, you're talking about an inside-out investment rather than an outside-in investment to help rebuild and build trust and build strength within these communities.
I think that's the only way we're going to see a difference in the Tenderloin and in Soma and in the Mission over the next year in Union Square. I think that's really the only way we're going to see a true difference in a year's time is if we have a transformative approach to an unarmed network that works with our police officers to bring them in when necessary. But if we invest in crisis de-escalation, mental health, physical health, arts and culture programming in these neighborhoods, then that block can really start to heal and thrive.
We're speaking with Amy Farrah Weiss. She's a candidate for mayor of San Francisco. I want to turn to the economy, which we've been talking about, but specifically a study by Intuit, which makes the program TurboTax, found about 34% of Americans are independent contractors. Mm. I'm not sure exactly what the number is in San Francisco, but I see a lot of Uber and Lyft cars around. So it means, among other things, that independent contractors don't receive benefits. And the number is definitely trending upward. What do you think about this kind of employment?
Not much. And I understand that for a lot of people, though, it feels like something that can get them from where they're at to where they want to go. And so they need this type of employment.
Like transitional.
And they'll take it. Yeah, and they'll take it. You know, I did know some people who were living in encampments that actually did Postmates. But I was always concerned that when tax season came along the following year, that they weren't going to file their taxes or that it would be a challenging situation for them to have saved that amount that they should have set aside as independent contractors. Because I was I get paid independent contractor status actually through my nonprofit because I'm fiscally sponsored through Intersection for the Arts. And so I only made $14,000 last year in my taxes, but I still owed money to the federal government because I received a chunk of that through independent contractor status. And so I'm very good at managing and budgeting, so I was fine. But I get concerned about people who are in crisis situations or, for them to not have that. And then the healthcare is an issue, obviously.
Well, what could you do as mayor of San Francisco to help that kind of situation?
Well, we just saw there's new state legislation or a state ruling around what independent contractor status is. And I'm sure that's going to be fought along the way. But
and this status is there's some criteria to determine if a worker should be considered an employee or a contractor.
Correct. And so it could change the status for Uber and Lyft drivers, et cetera. In San Francisco, it seems like we've been the hotbed and the breeding ground for a new type of deregulation, which is interesting because I remember a lot of people talking about how, former Obama staffers went and worked for Uber and these startup companies, and it doesn't seem like it adds up because they're slowly or quickly chipping away at worker protections to make sure that there is a fair share economy. And these companies that have all this venture capital funding and they're putting into certain positions, but not being not caring to sustain the people that they're reliant upon to do their work is unacceptable. And so as mayor, I'm a really big proponent of the work of the Sustainable Economics Law Center that's over in the East Bay. And I, as a candidate, have put out a couple of videos on my Facebook group, Vote 123 for Equity, that have been interviews with people talking about worker co-ops and how it is, as mayor, I will convene immediately a task force that's working to figure out how do we have regulations, whether it's enforcement of TNCs, Uber and Lyft through SFPD or other means, in order to regulate to the extent possible and then really work towards this pro-driver, pro-passenger, pro-environment platform that takes the best out of all these features and technologies that are coming on out there, but perhaps as a worker co-op model.
Do you see that as anti-corporate?
Well, worker co-ops are corporations. They have a different model for equitable distribution and growth and parity. And so I as mayor want to support businesses that are supporting all elements. So it's that triple bottom line of people, planet, and I think a sustainable profit that works within that donut economics, which Kate Raworth calls the sweet spot of economics, right? Because you want to make sure that you're addressing all those essential needs while having an economy that works.
I mean, I could see previous mayors arguing that they also believe in that. But do you think that previous administrations, say Lee, Newsom, Brown, have operated in that way?
They looked the other way and encouraged the proliferation of Uber and Lyft and Airbnb without regulations. They watched while our city was being impacted in these huge ways and didn't ask for anything. And I can't even believe that Gavin Newsom is a candidate for governor after, what he started in motion here and the Lee administration carried out that had such devastating impacts because of the economic decisions. And there was this, it was after the global financial collapse. And instead of thinking about how we work with our budget is still big, but it would take a leader to be able to tighten from the top, to be able to sustain those essential services, not cut from our nonprofits and essential services, but figure out how we can equitably tighten and sustain so that we wouldn't be as beholden to those forces in our economy. But they really pulled a fast one on us with this jobs, 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 change the tax policy, invite corporations in, startup corporations in a certain way, and not figure out how to do that without displacing our existing residents and having them truly being part of that wave of prosperity. And there has been a wave of prosperity, but a lot of people have been drowned by it rather than been lifted up.
I would imagine that the Chamber of Commerce or other business leaders might say this would cause an exodus of businesses from San Francisco, like the work that had been done with the Twitter tax break, for example, to build up the mid-market corridor, to allow for a SoMa development, that sort of thing. Like these things might change dramatically. Would you anticipate that if you were able to implement the changes you're talking about?
No. And the thing to keep in mind is that I'm very pragmatic and strategic in the kind of change that I would propose. And so, for instance, when it comes to development, I understand that in order to move forward, we need public-private partnerships where we could, as a city, focus on 50% affordable housing development. And the way that we do that is we say to the developers, okay, you're on the hook for this amount of the financing, but we're going to streamline this process even further. We have SB 35 that now streamlines projects that are 50% or more affordable. And so we
have affordable housing bonus plan. Is
that correct? We have that as well. Those are two, the focus on streamlining and taking off six months to a year of that process is huge.
Oh, right.
In terms
one's,
of reducing risk.
One state, one's local.
Correct.
Right.
And so there's this opportunity to focus further on that 50% affordable in a way that truly pencils out for the developers and also works with pension funds. And this is, once again, this opportunity to say, we have $500 million that is being looked at to divest, but we don't want to do that in any sudden way. We don't want to do that in a way that introduces risk to the portfolio. And so what you do is you have these partnerships with market rate financing, with government financing, which would be these zero to low interest loans for the very low income to low income aspect. And then with the moderate, you have the pension fund be able to finance that so that it's a reasonable rate of return. And these are all just formulas. And people might be surprised that, when I worked at the San Francisco Community Land Trust, I found it very interesting to see how when you're talking about loans you actually, there's a Excel spreadsheet that has a formula, and you're just popping in numbers and you're adjusting and you're figuring out what works. So it's not rocket science. It's actually working with the developer and with financing mechanisms such as, you know, or sources such as pension funds, which, by the way, already are doing this kind of investment. AFL-CIO invested in a couple of projects that were actually not necessarily affordable housing, but they did it because it would be good for their construction workers, mm-hmm. right? And so if we can have this multiple, you know, bang for our buck and get more, you know, affordable build for our buck, that would be great. And this is something that would be new. It would be a new approach.
And you'd be interested then in building more in San Francisco, but building more with affordable housing targets
sure.
in place.
And working with corporations to truly prepare our residents who are students right now to participate in that workforce.
With local hire.
And so that's going to put less strain on our systems. And so I want our businesses to prosper. I want us to truly be a capital of innovation for, you know, and we can start with how we deal with the homelessness crisis and the fact that we need to create, you know, lots of shelter very quickly.
Well, I know that you've got a lot to say about that. So let me just make sure to get an idea. And we're speaking with Amy Farrah Weiss. She's a candidate for mayor of San Francisco. So what would your plan look like to handle people living without homes in San Francisco?
So currently, it's important to know that the current framework is that there's that $30 million in a move along strategy invested in DPW and SFPD to shuffle people from block to block.
So having when people are in tent encampments, essentially, then eventually
or sleeping in a doorway or on the sidewalk.
Then they clear out their stuff. They take whatever they're going to take, and then they have them move, and they end up those people end up moving someplace else.
Correct. And so we currently invest $30 million into that strategy, and I think everyone could see very clearly it's a failed strategy that just perpetuates costly misery. And I've been working since the 2015 election. After, you know, the 2015 election. You know, I got 80,000 almost first, second, and third place votes. And I wanted to take that momentum and put it into a piece of my platform. And so I started the St. Francis Homelessness Challenge, a new nonprofit where I was researching, developing, and piloting, working with the unsheltered population in encampments, impacted neighbors, the service workers on the street from DPW, SFPD, Department of Homelessness, Department of Public Health, HSA in the shelters. So I got a really good understanding of how we can heal this crisis in this multi-departmental way from working on the ground, literally, and actually spending the night at an encampment to help create new relationships and organization and structure between the encampment and DPW, and went to City Hall with one of those encampment residents and tried to work with representatives from DPW and the Department of Homelessness. So I was doing this work and I understand how to partner together because we need to treat this truly like a crisis. And if there was an earthquake tomorrow, if there was a big one, one of the plans that the city has to stabilize that crisis is to create transitional villages, which is exactly what I'm wanting to model and prototype in the present day on underutilized land. And I have the license agreement, the insurance, I have the whole budget and the services mapped out. And we've been piloting this with one community at the Impact Hub and the Mission. And it's just saying that no longer do we accept that we have 3,500 people or so living without access to a toilet or a place to belong, because we understand that we need to create those pathways to healing and housing.
So how would the transitional villages work? Where would they be and what would be in them?
There's plenty of space in order to take the existing population that's on our streets and sidewalks and find more like locations that are more suited for that kind of setup. It depends on the particular piece of land, but we have something called SB 857, which Phil Ting passed and further amended actually recently, that gives us more leeway with using Caltrans property. And you're not allowed to build housing or shelter directly underneath a freeway, but you can have services under the freeway and you can have shelter that's on the sides. We have Phil Ting's AB 932 that he passed last October that hasn't been implemented locally, which is a real shame and a disgrace, actually, for the city that we haven't taken that opportunity. It allows us to create reasonable standards for addressing the shelter shortage crisis as a true emergency. So what we do with the St. Francis Homelessness Challenge is that we create these transitional shelters that are on caster wheels. And you could think of them like a mobile SRO, a mobile single room occupancy.
But it's not as big as an SRO hotel.
Well, actually, some of them are quite small. This is five. Some of the SROs are quite small. I've been in some that it would shock you. But 5 by 8 by 8, which has a, you know, shelving.
8 feet tall.
8 feet tall. So it has shelving and it has a platform for sleeping on and storage underneath. And we also have additional storage capacity. The idea is that this whole program is based on reasonable agreements and responsibilities. And so we're
So you bring a bunch of these 5 by 8 by 8 shelters.
We build them together. Mm-hmm. If I become mayor, or if I'm working with a mayor who becomes elected, who wants to truly treat this like a crisis, we have a summer of love and logic. We actually invite the whole city, businesses, impacted neighbors, encampment residents to, you know, we'll identify the locations where this can be. And generally, I like to focus on already impacted neighborhoods because they're already feeling the pain. And this is actually a solution to the pain.
Where this would be the Mission District.
Soma, but every district has at least 50 people that are currently unsheltered. And so every district can have one of these spaces, but you could have one space that has 5 residents in the village. But here's the thing is that there's a whole program that's set up so that it's a community integration team. And in our pilot over at the Impact Hub, there are 3 neighbors that live next door that we have weekly meetings with the resident in transition who was living on the street for a couple of years. She went into the navigation center for a while, but was exited after 30 days without being offered housing. And, you know, there's also a challenge with some people not wanting to accept SRO rooms because they require a payee. And so there's a certain amount of the population that have been offered SRO rooms, but still aren't ready for that transition for what it entails to move forward. So what we're offering is we're saying no more do we let someone sleep on the street without access to a toilet. Can I get an amen? Can everybody in San Francisco agree that no more we allow someone to live in a place where they feel like they don't belong, they're a pariah on society? We meet essential needs, but that means that we ask people to give back in terms of supporting the operation of the village and the neighborhood. So it's actually a community benefit. But one thing to really point out here is that for the same amount of money we currently spend, $30 million on moving people around, I have a model where we could build these individual shelters in a structured environment with 60 hours of on-site support service for transition, for resident empowerment and working and living together, for community integration, 60 hours of on-site services for every 20 people in the least restrictive, most autonomous environment. I have a background in transitional housing and mental health and living in intentional healing communities. I understand. I'm a subject matter expert in this. I've been doing this work. I know how to do it. I am running for mayor because I am sick and tired of the Board of Supervisors and what was the Lee administration and now is the Farrell administration deciding to treat the symptoms and not heal at the root with something that started in the 60s with Ronald Reagan as governor and continued up to his presidency in the 80s. And I'm 41 years old and I'm saying I've seen homelessness in San Francisco since I was a kid. And I'm saying it's time to actually do something different, treat it like a crisis, create a new bottom rung where people have a place to heal and get housed in community. And we export this and we deal with this as a city, as a region, as a state, as a country right now. And it starts with San Francisco.
That's Amy Farrah Weiss. She is a candidate for mayor of San Francisco. So with a little bit of time left, I've got a bunch more questions, but I have a lightning round. So the idea here is to give really short answers. They could be as short as one word. They could be a couple words. They could be a sentence. If you go more than a sentence, we might have to, like, you know, cut it off a little bit. All right, so lightning round. You ready?
Ready.
Okay, the first question is, what do you think of public transportation in San Francisco?
Well, ample room for improvement, obviously. But right now, we're figuring out how to transition from private car ownership as a model that's been accepted into how do we sustain without that. And there are some growing pains, and we need to figure out how to make it more accessible.
San Francisco as a sanctuary city.
Continue on.
What do you think about the use of tasers in policing?
We don't need an additional weapon before we learn how to use crisis de-escalation skills.
The legalized adult use of recreational marijuana, good or bad?
There was an unfortunate impact of Prop 64, which made it more challenging to provide compassion programming and equitable access. And so that's something that I've been working to address. And I would like to use I have experience in the cannabis industry, and I would like to use that as a way to transition people out of using and selling harsher drugs like meth and heroin. It's just like if you have someone in the coal industry and you want to transition them out, you get them a job in solar. Meth and heroin, using or selling, let's use the cannabis industry as this healing agent and opportunity for them to transition.
And other cities are looking into that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Charter schools versus conventional public schools.
Public schools.
Charter schools or public schools?
Well, I'm talking about investing in SFUSD at this moment. I know that there are big issues with education and opportunity gaps right now for our students, especially African-American and Latino students. And so we really do need to work with parents to address that. And I see that, unfortunately, there's this group called Innovate, and they are a parent empowerment group around this, but they're unfortunately also linked to charter schools. And I want to, I don't want to support charter schools, but I feel like they're putting forth a lot of good information about the economic, the ethnic disparities and all of that. So it's like, how do you, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater on that? How do we work with parents to have that kind of representation? And then I'm a big supporter of the parcel tax to give teachers in San Francisco a working living wage.
Well, that wasn't lightning exactly, but I understand. That makes sense. This one might be lightning. The Golden State Warriors coming to San Francisco.
Well, I think that the Warriors should do their part to continue to invest in the part of Oakland that they left behind, because there's a lot of need for economic opportunity there. I think it's really sad that Ed Lee's legacy that he proposed was a sports arena in a time of such economic disparity, and that it's Chase Bank that is the name of that stadium. It just tells you all that's wrong with San Francisco right now.
The Central Subway.
Yes, let's expand. I know that it's on, right now, the timeline, whoever becomes mayor needs to figure out how to, help with the expansion. Are you talking about the existing subway, the project that's trying to expand to Chinatown?
Yes.
Right now? So,
yes.
Yeah, just making sure that that's going, as quickly as possible. I know there was a recent report on that, and thinking about opportunities to, that whole dig once idea. Why didn't we continue on? It was going to be cheaper if we continued drilling rather than doing this process again. And I feel like the planning is really off there. There was more opportunity to get more accomplished and, you know, more build for a buck on that one.
So I've got about 3 minutes left. So okay. Super lightning. How did Market Street change during the Lee administration?
We had an opportunity to ask ourselves, why is the mid-market area blighted and vacant? Why are property owners not renting out their properties? And we had the opportunity to activate those spaces without catering to, a new era of a boom that's going to displace so many people don't get to participate in it. So I felt like I still feel like Market Street doesn't feel good. Like it doesn't have, it's missing this vitality. It's not grown in a way that's distributive. And so it's just highlighting the inequity right now rather than truly feeling healed.
Electric scooters.
I was very vocal. I think I might have been the first mayoral candidate to say that we can't allow them to come onto the streets in this way with complete disregard for process. And it's important for us to figure out that last mile, so to speak, between Muni and BART and the destination. And we can look into this, but there's once again, they're paying workers minimum wage to recharge these things. They're expendable. I guess they have a shelf life of 2 months to 6 months at best. And so there's going to be a lot of e-waste. It's venture capitalists just using us as their testing ground with hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't appreciate it. Let's work together to truly solve these issues of transportation, but in a way that's respectful of process.
And two more questions I have. Just one sentence for each one. What do you hate most about San Francisco?
I hate that City Hall hasn't treated the encampment and shelter shortage crisis like a true crisis.
What do you love most about San Francisco?
I love that we live in the city of St. Francis with the motto of do what's necessary, do what's possible, and soon you will be doing the impossible.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Angela, can you help her finish up? Because I have to go run over here. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed talking
with
you. Yeah,
great conversation.
I love all the thought that you have. I mean, obviously, so much depth of knowledge and thought about homelessness. And really, I can feel what you're talking about, that homelessness is not being treated like a crisis in actuality.
Well, in our whole country.
True.
So it's easy for us to say, well, why should we be the ones to do it differently,
right? Yeah.
And that's what we feel about.